Welcome back, Podcast Universe, to another episode of Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. I'm Jesus Eddie Campa, your host. And today's episode is a little bit different. I was on a 10-hour road trip, so I figured it would be a great opportunity to interview some people. So I set up the car, Bluetoothed everything, speakers, microphones, used the radio, the Bluetooth on the audio, on the radio, in the vehicle. And wouldn't you know, it all worked perfectly. But I failed to take into consideration that I would be moving and I'd be hitting dead spots and things like that, right? As I'd be driving for 10 hours. And so in this episode, and several of the other episodes that I recorded during this 10-hour drive, because I scheduled five interviews, which were each an hour long, and I figured that I was going to be able to, you know, go back and edit it. But some of the interviews that I did, the audio was just so horrible. It was just breaking in bad, horribly. You know, of course, these people that I interviewed, you know, they're very busy individuals. They're leaders. They're head of agencies and organizations. And it's kind of hard to schedule time with them. So I had scheduled everybody for this one day, and I figured it was going to be just perfect. I gave myself, you know, 30 minutes in between each interview. I thought I had, detailed it out correctly, where I was going to be in areas where I had good reception. And obviously I was wrong. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with admitting that you're wrong. You made some mistakes. So the audio on this particular podcast is a little off. It's not horrible. It's just a little bit off. There's a little time delay between me asking a question and the guest answering the question. So it's not horrible. It's been edited. I've gone in and tweaked it a little bit, and we've probably lost a little bit more than half of the interview, but I think you'll get the point then. Sean, you know, I know you're going to be listening to this, so I apologize. It was my bad. And hopefully I'll be able to get you back on the show. But hey, you know, we're going and we're learning. This is new. Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership is a new podcast just hitting out the airwaves, dedicated and designed for today's leaders to let them know that they're not alone. You know, there's nothing wrong with failure, making the wrong decisions, as long as you own it and you continue to move forward. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's enough of me talking. You're going to hear my interview with my good friend Sean, and let's get it started. So I hope you enjoy it and continue to share the link with your friends and your loved ones as we continue to grow a safe haven for leaders, a network for leaders. So once again, Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership, new episode hitting the airwaves now. Going live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership.
Welcome to another episode of Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership. Like always, I'm your host, Jesus Eddie Campa, and today joining me is a really good friend of mine that I met at a school residency a few years back as we're both working on our PhD. And Sean, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Welcome, man. How are you today?
Thank you, Eddie. I'm glad to be here with you, and I'm honored that you actually chose me.
When I started thinking about great leaders and the conversations we had and people that I know, you know, basically I'm tired of the podcast that always goes out to the world famous leaders, the leaders that everybody knows, and nobody gives, you know, credit to us little guys who are out here trying to get to that spotlight, you know.
We make the little make the big guys look good.
Yes, there you go. So, you know, Sean, I mean, I know and love everything about you, man. So, but the listening public doesn't. So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, I am Sean Robleski. I am a paramedic firefighter, paramedic manager with Perry Highway Hose Company right now. I live in Erie, Pennsylvania. I was originally born down in a small town outside of Pittsburgh. Live here in Erie for, most of my life now. I have a beautiful wife, Jessica, that's a City of Erie police officer, and three pugs that keep us very active every day, unfortunately.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, I know you love those pugs, and you're a very loving husband, and you know your wife like my wife, your wife like my wife are younger than we are, and apparently they're also blind. So you know, because we were blessed with some beautiful women by our side.
Oh yes, yours is just as beautiful as mine, and we are equally lucky to have such great women at our sides. Because you know, if I was her, I would have divorced me years ago.
Amen. Me too, brother. I mean, not if I was your wife. I'm saying if I was my wife, I would have left me a long time ago too.
Oh yes.
So awesome.
Hey Sean, why don't you share with our listening audience the way we met and how we got to know each other? That's an interesting topic within itself.
We like training. That's we like learning. And you know, we were at the residency, our first residency. You're in the criminal justice program. I'm in the emergency management program through Capella University. You know, I showed up late because, well, funny, there's two professors with the same name, and I went to the black professor instead of the white professor where I was supposed to be at. Not meaning any racial, you know, derogatory statements, but that's pretty much how we had to break them down because the names were identical, the titles are identical. So
well, no, it was funny that you have two professors working in the same university,
and nobody knew that both of them were at the same residency,
and one of them happens to be African American, and the other one happens to be white. I mean, what are the odds?
When I finally figured it out, 2 or 3 hours later, you know, I'm the strange guy walking into class, and you were sitting there in the corner, very welcoming, and you know, kind of making light of the situation. And I'm like, yeah, you know, this is going to be a fun day, and you know, I got to. Caught up to speed. You kind of helped me out a little bit. We went out to lunch and dinner and all that other good stuff, and we just kind of hit it off from the beginning. You know, and through the challenges of that weekend, trying to keep everything organized and go through all the work and, you know, all the little problems that were developed along the way, you know, I had to go from this huge classroom with a lot of technology to a classroom that had absolutely nothing. I'm like, wait a minute, how are we chiseling in stone to try and get internet when all these other classrooms are having everything handed to them? You know, what did we do wrong? How am I getting punished for this? You know, so it was just one of those challenges that we had to work through just to get, you know, to the point where we are today.
Right.
And, you know, I thank God and, you know, all the local know steps that we had to take along the way that, you know, you and I became friends because, you know, it's been a great thing. I've enjoyed knowing you and I've enjoyed talking to you, and you know, we celebrated New Year's together this year virtually, so you know, it's been a great ride, and you know, you and I have a lot in common, and you know, we respect each other, and you know, this is where we're at. So
and for those of you know, for our listening audience who doesn't know, who's not aware, I mean, you know, me and Sean were, you know, we're working on our PhD, and that's where we met. You know, we both have masters in two different areas, but you know, they kind of coincide together. I'm doing the criminal justice public service leadership, and you're doing homeland security. What interested? I mean, you went from one extreme to the other, which I guess it's not really an extreme. Because, I mean, the medical field, the fire department, it all goes hand in hand, but you went from medic to homeland security, correct?
Much later in life. You know, I went to the Army, got my medic, got out, started working right away. So I didn't go to school. I actually dropped out of high school in the 11th grade to join the Army because that's what we could do back then. And, you know, I always felt bad. I got my GED through the Army. And, you know, I got disabled in 2007, post-traumatic stress because of some incidents that I had been on. And my doctor says, you got to take a break. And I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So I went back to school and I went for criminal justice. I'm like, well, you know, that's something that I've always wanted to do that I never fully got to appreciate. So I started in criminal justice, you know, and then after I got the criminal justice down, I'm like, you know, I enjoyed being in school. I like this learning thing. You know, I went to Penn State and got my master's in Homeland Security and also public health, because I figure, well, you know, I can bridge both guidelines. There's a division between EMS, fire, and police that, you know, something's missing. So I'm going to try and coordinate all this together and bring it together. And that led me to the PhD in emergency management to, you know, I understand how all three major components of emergency services operate and what's required of each individual person and the stresses that are on each one. And I said, you know, there's better ways we can coordinate. You know, the fire is always after the police, whether it's, you know, ribbon or, you know, they got this benefit, that benefit. You know, EMS is always kind of the bastard child because we weren't started until the late 60s, early 70s. So, you know, it's like we all have our jobs to play. We all respect each other. We all have a little fun, but yet we also argue amongst each other. So, you know, there's better ways to work together. And I'm looking forward to moving that forward, you know. So it's been, you know, it's quite a long process.
Right, right. So what I'm going to do here, Sean, is I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Hey, there you are.
I'm here, man. I lost you in the desert of New Mexico. The enchant is, I think New Mexico is the enchanted state, I think.
Yeah, something along those lines, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, so we had just finished talking. So who are your top three leaders that you had? You mentioned one already, Patton. Who are the other two?
Oh, that's a very good question. There are a lot of good leaders out there. You know. Oh. Well, Patton's been one that I've always looked up to. You know, I've always been that military person. You know, I like General Schwarzkopf. I like Colin Powell. You know, I like what they, you know, they've done. I've always been the military person. But, you know, Rudolph Giuliani is one of those people. I like his leadership style. I like how aggressive he is with getting things done during the 9/11 incidents. I like what I saw right. from him.
I agree.
You know, it's just one of those ones. He was able to inspire people. He reminded me, you know, Ronald Reagan was probably one of my favorite presidents, but I think he was more of an actor because he started out as an actor. You know, he was always what, the great speaker, I think they called him. You know, mm-hmm. So, you know, he kind of reminded me of Ronald Reagan. You know, that was the president I grew up with. I remember seeing him getting shot and that. So it yep. was, he yep. was just always inspiring. He had everybody like drooling for him, unlike Trump that everybody's throwing fruit at him. you know, but he's a New Yorker, so he's got to be used to that by now.
Right.
You know, so I would have to say Rudolph Giuliani would be one of them. And, you know, one of the greatest people that I remember growing up with in the fire service, one of the old chiefs, Terry Grappi. You know, everybody hated him. Everybody loved him. He was just opinionated, but he did things the same way almost every time. You know, he's just kind of that person that, you know, when I looked and I was young in the fire service, he kind of took me under his wing and he says, this is what you want to do. This is why you do it. This is why you don't do it. And he was just one of these people that, you know, he taught me the ropes. He taught me how to think about my people, to think about why I'm doing things. You know, he wasn't an educated man, you know, but he knew how things worked and he was able to inspire and get things done. So, you know, that'd probably be my three greatest people, you know, one personal, one political, and then just one that's iconic to me.
Right. I hear you. So, you know, I'm going to take a quick pause here.
You know, there's more classes you can take, and you can never get enough of the same class because things are always evolving. You always got to stay on top of your game, whether it's in the police service, fire, or EMS. You have to continuously relearn everything over again. It has to become muscle memory, whether it's from an officer trying to draw his gun underneath stress or it's a firefighter running into a building to save a child. You've got to be on the top of your game. You've got to see everything that's around you, and you can't get the tunnel vision that we all do. You know, you can't focus on one little subject or one little topic there. You got to look at what's going on to the left, to the right, above and below you, as well as everybody that's behind you. And you can't do that without education. You really need to have that component. And being a leader, to me, is you lead from the front lines. You don't ask anybody behind you to do the job you're not willing to do yourself. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of respect for that. And I hammer that home every day, that you've got to lead by setting the example.
Right, that's very important. I mean, if you're going to lead, you got to lead by example. You got to lead from the front. You know, there's also, you know, there's two trains of thought. You know, there's also talk about, you know, leading from the rear, which I totally understand. But, you know, I really believe more in the school of leading from the front, setting the example and teaching people. And you said it just perfectly clear, you know, as a leader, we have to realize that things are always evolving and always changing. So we continue to go to the schools, we continue to increase our education level to, you know, either keep the skills sharp or refresh them or gather the new information. So with that said, Sean,
well,
as a
you know,
leader,
people,
why do you think
I'm even one of these
people
that,
have such,
you know,
a hard time with change?
I don't embrace change well, but I know it needs to occur. And, you know, it's one of those things. We've got into the habit. It's easy for us. We know everything about it. So now you're telling me to do it a different way. Okay, why? Prove to me why I need to do it a different way. And, you know, sometimes they'll be able to give you the science and the mathematics that say, okay, yeah, we need to be doing it that way. And then there's other people that say, well, we just think it's a good idea. And, you know, I've seen that a lot with medicine. And, you know, every 4 to 6 years, American Heart Association is changing the way that we do CPR or the way that we use these different medications. You know, it's just like law enforcement. Okay, this case presented, you know, something about, you know, personal rights and personal safety that, you know, now the officer can't do it this way. You know, or this local case presented another problem that the officer went in and saw this, and he shouldn't have seen this under normal circumstances, but the federal government's allowing it. So there's always a little competition in between what we need to know and what we need to do. And that bridge is relearning everything over again of, okay, what's the current trends? What do we need to do today to prepare for tomorrow? And if we continue to watch, we'll actually be able to predict what's going to happen tomorrow if we can do it and continue to be on our game about it. You know, okay, this is the way we need to lead. This is the way, the direction we need to head, because tomorrow it's going to be changing. It's not going to be the way it is today. And it's never going back to the way it was yesterday.
Or at least we hope not, because, you know, I'm a big proponent of thinking, you know, I love change. I embrace change as long as it's for the greater good. I mean, I don't just go around and change things for the sake of changing things. You know, there has to be a reason behind it. There has to be a science behind it. There has to be, like you said, you know, I am of the belief that there's always a better way of doing things. And if there isn't, well, then there's a better way of learning it or a better way of teaching it. So one of the things that you know, sometimes people say, yeah, but you're always talking about history and the past. And I said, right, because it's important to remember the mistakes of the past so you don't recreate the mistakes of the past in the future. And as a leader, you have to kind of remember the things that you learned in the past and the things that went wrong in order to avoid repeating those in the future. So, you know, that was a pretty good segue into that. So, you know, Sean, one of the other things is, you know, why do you think, tell us about a time that you had to lead, and you pretty much opened up with it. So, you know, when you were talking about the challenges and the issues that Pennsylvania faces with their fire agencies, you know, you kind of opened up with the fact that funding's an issue. They're all volunteers. There's very limited training. So, I mean, right then and there, you're already leading through adversity. I mean, it's like, wow, how do I get all this structured, right? And you're having to be, you happen to be the organization guy, the organizational guy. So it's like, how the heck do I get all this together, right? So I want to ask you to expand on something, maybe on a different time that you were, that you had no choice but to lead through adversity, because I was, I mean, you were in a situation.
And to tell you a lot, and be the leader that you are, one little story,
and get us.
I'll try not to diverse like I normally do. Back when I was just a firefighter, I'd been with the department for probably 6 or 7 years. You know, a lieutenant and I, a lieutenant came from a different department because he moved into our area. We had an argument over a water rescue policy. And the policy for our water rescue was we would always wear our bunker gear, our turnout gear, which was old, heavy, rubber-made gear pretty much, that was just miserable. It got wet from, you know, the fire hoses or us sweating, and it weighed 10 more pounds from all the water. And our policy was that we wore that gear whenever we went onto a boat, because we cover a large geographical area of Lake Erie. And I'm like, no, I'm not wearing my gear on a boat if we get such a call, because it's just going to weigh you down and the life preserver is not going to help you. Well, the next day was Mother's Day. And unfortunately, we had a water rescue call. Had to go get two guys from Pittsburgh that got caught out in a severe storm, you know, 10-foot waves coming in. Well, him, the chief, and one of the game commission officers took the game commission boat out to try and rescue them because they had capsized. And their boat capsized. And unfortunately, he perished in that day. And, you know, that was kind of horrific because he and I had just argued the night before over this very policy. And, you know, other people that were standing around was like flabbergasted, like, well, how'd you know that? I'm like, it's just logic. It's common sense. You know, you have policy that works and policy that doesn't. You have to put safety sometimes above the policy and use your common sense to meet the objective or whatever objective we're going after. And that's kind of where my leadership skills started. Was I saw the incident, you know, we argued over it. And unfortunately, you know, I hate to say it, but I was proven right that it wasn't going to work. And fortunately, you know, since then they've changed a lot of the policies as far as that goes and everything. But it was a very dire learning experience for me that, you know, we have to continuously look and question some of the changes that we're making. And we have to lead by thinking ahead.
Right. So, you know, very good point. Very good. I mean, very true.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes, unfortunately, it takes tragedy to get a point across. And unfortunately, that's kind of what happened in that situation. But, you know, I'm gonna take a little break here and just, you know, let you know. So I started recording this podcast in Texas. I've just crossed into New Mexico. So, and you're in Pennsylvania. So this is a Leading Through Adversity podcast tour as we travel across the country from one destination to another. But so anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be right back. And, you know, I actually don't get I'm not a paid sponsor or anything like this for what I'm about to say. But have you ever tried Frito's brand flavored twist honey barbecue chips? These are really good, man. No, when you get to the store, you should get yourself a bag because they're really good. Anyway, that's my plug. Maybe they'll hear it and send me a free box of Fritos or something. I don't know. Going back. So tell us about it. Tell us what you wish somebody had told you about leadership before you had chosen to take a leadership role.
Don't do it.
Right? What are you thinking?
Exactly.
No, it wasn't when I took it.
You know, yeah. One of the things that, you know, has always stuck with me is, you know, one of my heroes throughout life has always been General Patton. It's always lead, follower, get out of my way. You know, you hammer everything home and you do it that way. But, you know, even looking at history, he was not always the right person to look at for problem solving. He was just the person that got it done and made it happen. You know, but my grandfather always kind of said, you know, be the person that you want to be and you want people to look up to you and respect you. And that's the kind of leader that I want to be, is I want to be somebody that you can look up to, you can come to with your problems, both personal and professional, we'll work through it. And, you know, just be the leader you want to have leading you. Be somebody that you can go to with your problems, that you can go to with issues, and you feel comfortable doing it, that you're not going to judge the other people. You know, be that person that helps get you more in tune with yourself, more ready for the future, and inspires you to go out there and do the things that need to get done. You know, being in the military, you know, I always look at it as, okay, we're just going into blind fire and, you know, doing it because somebody's telling us to. Well, you know, they're not just telling you to do it. They're willing to do it themselves sometimes.
So let me ask you this question. Why do you think that leaders are often criticized? And it's usually the leaders with a lot of experience. I mean, you've been doing this for God knows since, I mean, basically since fire was created almost. Just kidding.
But I know the guy that did.
There you go. You're talking to him, right? Jesus, here. I know, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding, God. Why do you think that leaders with experience or frontline leaders or guys who've actually done it, who are actually in the arena, why do you think they're often criticized by those that, one, have never led, two, have limited leadership experience, or three, actually have no formal education but think that they know what a leader is because their idea of leadership is a guy who lets me do whatever I want to do and holds others accountable but not me?
Well, you know, I wish I had all the answers for that one, but, you know, the only thing I can look at, and, you know, I've criticized some leaders in the past, and, you know, I look at their education. I look at the person that, you know, where have they been? What have they done? Is it somebody I can actually say, oh, he's been there. He's done that. You know, do I still want to criticize him? You know, do I think I know his reasoning? And, you know, after you sit down and look at it, okay, there might be some validity to it. But, you know, I also listen to other people that are sitting there criticizing the same person for many different reasons. And, you know, it's hard to say what their methods are or what their motivation is. You know, I've got one individual that criticizes me all the time. I mean, he goes back, redoes everything I do, and he nitpicks everything I've done throughout the day. He sits around. I mean, he actually physically follows me around with a notebook. And yeah, it's crazy, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, I go to the chief, I go to the president, I say, look, this is what it is. You know, they've called me on the carpet a couple times. Well, this person says this. Okay, this is what happened. Does that match his statement? This is why I did it. No, you were right in doing that. I'm like, okay, these are the reasons. Does he know the reasons? No, he doesn't know the reasons. Well, then, you know, it's just, I think blindness is, they want to be in charge sometimes. They want to be the person they envision a leader being, is somebody that sits there, barks orders, and doesn't actually do the job.
So, hey, Sean, you know, we've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about what you've done, you know, talked about change, talked about the importance of change. We've talked about how you get people to come on board with change. I mean, we've talked about criticism, and, you know, we've all been there as leaders. We're always going to be criticized. You know, we talked about our the way we met and all that good stuff. So let me close off by asking you this one question. And basically this question is, what would you say to that young man or woman who's about to just start their leadership career and has already blown it and said, I want to be a leader because I like being criticized all the time. So we've got that part. So what would you tell that individual next? What should that person expect, and how should they deal with it?
Well, dealing with it, that's something, a whole different can of worms. They should expect to have to prove themselves. They should expect to be questioned, and they should expect to have to relearn everything they thought they knew, because nothing is going to be as you envision being a leader is. They need to get educated, re-educate themselves, and continuously stay on top of their game. They need to learn their people, learn what their people like, what they dislike, and most importantly, make sure you're the caring leader that will care about your people. Because if you people know and feel cared about and appreciated, they in turn will almost always appreciate the leader that they have.
Right. You know, and I'm glad you said that, because this is kind of what this show is a little bit about, is that a new leader or experienced leader, they need to understand that there's a big difference between caring and having empathy for your subordinates, and there's a big difference to making them your friend. You know, as a leader, you're going to have to hold them accountable, but that doesn't mean you should not care about them or be empathetic to the situations that they're in. A lot of people don't understand, and you'll hear this, and this is why I feel like leaders are often criticized by individuals, is because a lot of individuals confuse the business relationship to the friendship relationship. So as a new leader, I think that is something that is very important to them, that they need to learn that they're going to lose their friends, and that there is a fine line between the job and friendship.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There definitely is. You know, just because one of your employees invites you to their, you know, new child's baptism, you know, doesn't mean, no, I'm your boss, I can't go. Go. Enjoy. You know, say hi. Appreciate their joy. You know, express your joy in their happiness, and just show them that, you know, you're there for them. You know, the child gets sick later on in life. Hey, call them into the office. Hey, I've heard you having some problems. You know, what can I do to help you? You know, but you've got to have that division. You're not going to go take them out for a beer, listen to all their problems, and, you know, help them in their personal life. You still have to have the organization interest at heart. I mean, you can know what's going on, and you should know what's going on, but, you know, you've got to learn that division there. You know, there's some things you can do, but when you know that person that you comes to you and says, hey, you know, I really need this promotion, it's like, you know, put in for it, apply for it, but, you know, it's going to be the best person for the job. I'm sorry. You know, I can't just put you in because I've been to your child's wedding or because your child's sick. You got to work for it. I'm sorry. You know, you can't do little favors for that as much as you'd like to. You know, you can't bring your friends on board because, well, I think they'll make a good point to this position or a good assistant to me. No, it has to be the most qualified person for the job. And, you know, you see a lot of that hiring internally versus hiring externally. You get people that say, hey, I've been here for 10 years. Why didn't I get the job? Well, these are the things you need to tell the people. These are the things you need to work on. These are the skills and the highlights that, you know, this person had over you. You know, we're looking for more than just loyalty. We're looking for a lot of knowledge and experience too. You know, do you want resources to go out and get the experience? Here, I'll help you get the experience if that's where you're heading in life. But you can't just be awarded. You know, you can't just bring your friends on board. You know, you got to know that they're going to be a right fit for the position. That person might be the person that you need, but you also have to prove it to the other individuals. Yeah. You know?
Right. Absolutely. So, Sean, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about leadership and the adversity, the unmasking, and all that good stuff. So just to close it out, is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners with before we call it a day?
Oh, well, there's a lot of things I could obviously say because, I mean, obviously, Eddie, you've opened up a new side of me here that I diverge quite a bit. But as far as the listeners, you know, always be that person you aspired to be. Don't let go of your inner child, because sometimes that inner child is going to be the only thing that helps you sleep at night. And most of all, if you're having problems, there's always a resource out there to help you, regardless of what it is. So always look.
Exactly. Good topic. And that's what Leading Through Adversity is all about. We're trying to give leaders who are out there, who are facing any type of adversity, who are facing any type of situation, who may feel alone. Because I know that when I first became, you know, my leadership role started when I was way young. You know, I was kind of like the leader, the little leader of the group in our neighborhood, and it transcended into junior high and high school. And then, you know, I got my first management job at Walmart as a department manager. And then it just kind of, you know, it's always escalated from there. So, you know, there's been times where you feel like you're alone because you're going through a situation where people may be criticizing you, don't agree with you. You're catching a lot of, you know, you're catching a lot of heat for a decision you made or a decision you didn't make. I mean, being a leader is a very hard thing to do, but there's a few things you just got to remember. Lead with character, lead with character. Never forget who you are. Never forget where you came from. I love that. Never forget your childhood.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I love that part. And this is a place for leaders to come in, listen to different leaders about their adversity and stuff like that. And if you have any questions, you know, or you'd like to be part of the show, or you have a topic you'd like for us to touch on, you can always reach out to me at Eddie C. That's Eddie C, the letter C, at leadingthroughadversity.com. That's my email. Shoot me an email with a question or a topic, if you want to be a guest on the show. And this show is really intended for the future leader, the current leader, or the leader of yesterday and the leader of today who wants to pass on their knowledge to leaders who may feel that they're out there by themselves. Because, as you know, being a leader is a lonely road.
Oh, yes, it is. It's a road traveled by many but completed by few.
Exactly. I mean, because I'll be quite honest with you. You know, I've been the target of a lot of criticism, and you know my story. But if I was under the scrutiny like Donald Trump, man, I don't know if I'd be able to handle it. I'll give that man that much. He does a hell of a job handling scrutiny and criticism.
Well, you know, he regardless of what decision he makes, he's always going to be wrong, and somebody's going to be investigating him. And that's, you know,
yep.
The reason why is. And, you know, the only reason why I can see that is somebody's afraid. Whatever they're afraid of, you know, but they're trying to, you know, just discredit them, make them look bad, and, you know, get the popular vote. But, hey, as far as I'm concerned, he's done decent with everything he's had to do.
Right, you know, and I think you touched on it pretty well. You know, I was a fan, or I guess I still am a fan of Donald Trump the entertainer, you know, when he was on Celebrity Apprentice and How to Be a Millionaire book, and you know, every one of my tie I own every all of my ties are Donald Trump ties. However, while I disagree with about 80% of his political view right now, I mean, the man has done a decent job, like you said, and you're right, fear is We as humans always tend to fear the unknown, and we do things a little bit different, and everybody gets scared.
Well, you know, the one thing I look at, and you know, I don't like the man personally. I despise the man personally, and I think there's a better person out there. However, he has done a decent job with what he has to work with. He's a businessman. He's not a politician, and he's a New Yorker. He's not a politician. He speaks like a New Yorker. he just says it. He doesn't think about what he says. He just says it. Oh, okay. You know, setting that aside, you know, not taking him for the literal aspect of it. He's looking at the business side of it. And, you know, you and I both know from looking at government budgets to business budgets, there's quite a bit of waste in the government side that he's looking at saying, hey, why do we have this here? Where the business side is, okay, let's cut this here and put it over here. So that's the other thing I think they're not liking, but, you know, getting away from politics.
Getting away from politics. But you know what? I will have to say, you know, I didn't know much about Cuomo, and, you know, he's been kind of interesting to watch on TV. And I think he'd be an interesting character. I guess I don't know if the presidency is ready for another New Yorker anytime soon. But anyway,
no, we need another actor. Let's go with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, he wasn't born in the U.S. I think I don't think he qualifies. And I don't know if you follow him on social media, but he's got two donkeys living with him inside his house. Look at that. Look up. Arnold Schwarzenegger's donkeys. He literally has two donkeys in his house, and they actually eat off of his plate while he's having breakfast. Or just very weird. So I'm done with weirdness in the White House. I need somebody that's a little more calm and a little bit more. Reagan was a great president. You know, a lot of people don't like Reagan, and I know there's a few friends of mine who are probably falling off their chairs because I'm saying that, because I've never been a friend. I've never been a proponent of Reaganomics.
No, I wasn't either. So,
but that's a whole different story. I think Bill Clinton was a great president.
Oh, he definitely was.
I'm sure
he definitely was.
You know, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who will disagree with us, but that's what it is. We live in a nation where we can, you know, agree to disagree on certain things.
Exactly.
It is what it
is. It's just like leadership. You got to look at the man and what he does as opposed to your feelings for him.
Exactly. All right. Well, Sean, thanks for being a guest on my show. I know you're a busy man. You got a lot of things to do. So I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let our audience go. And once again, everybody, this is Jesus Eddie Campo on Leading Through Adversity, Unmasking Leadership with my very special guest, Sean.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you all next week. Toodles. I don't know why I just said toodles. That sounded so weird. But anyway.